Good evening, folks. From the heart of West Texas and the South Plains, this is a special presentation from Town Talk Media Productions. Tonight, voters across Texas, U.S. Congressional District 19, will hear directly from the Republican primary runoff candidates seeking to represent this region in Washington, D.C. This forum is dedicated to giving voters an opportunity to hear the candidates discuss the issues impacting our communities, from agriculture and energy to border security, rural health care, economic development, and the future of West Texas. Tonight's forum is presented by Town Talk Media Productions, serving Brownfield, Terry County, and communities across the South Plains. Thank you for joining us on Facebook Live, the Town Talk app, and streaming platforms across the region. And now, it's time for the Texas U.S. District 19 Republican primary runoff forum.
All right, everybody, good evening, and welcome to this special edition of Town Talk Media Production. I am Eric Wharton, and we are coming to you live right now from the beautiful downtown luxurious Town Talk studio on the square of Brownfield, Texas, across the street from the beautiful square-looking courthouse. So anyway,
square-looking courthouse.
It is a square-looking courthouse. Okay. Anyway, but I want to welcome everybody this evening, myself. And, of course, I'm actually his sidekick.
No,
I'm your sidekick more than anything else. But Dan and I are going to be doing this tonight with Mr. Tom Sell and Mr. Abraham Enriquez. And we are so glad that they're here with us this evening. And I'm going to pass on to Dan now because he has a welcoming as well. So,
yeah, folks, we are really proud tonight. Eric put this together and did the legwork, he and Adrian, and we are so proud to have both these gentlemen in studio tonight. This is a very important race for West Texas, and
yes,
the first time, I think, in a long time we've gone to a runoff, which I think is outstanding. So it's a great opportunity. We're glad to have you guys in Brownfield, Texas. We've got some questions that we're really proud of, and I hope that, inform our folks that are listening tonight. You've got a lot of decisions to make coming up the day after Memorial Day. Of course, next week begins early voting on the 18th.
Yes.
So lots to think about, and hopefully tonight we'll have some questions answered for you and get to hear it straight from these gentlemen. So we're proud to have you guys in Brownfield. Thank you for being here tonight.
Absolutely. And I have jury duty next Monday on the 18th. First time ever.
Only you.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah, we'll see what happens there, right? So anyway, before we keep moving on here, we do want to tell all of our sponsors and advertisers here at Town Talk Media, thank you. B&S Heating and Air, they just told me that I have to get a new, what is that thing called?
Yeah. Heating and air conditioning unit?
Yeah, the new one. A new
compressor.
One. Compressor, thank you, yes.
Well, that'll be cheap.
The church does, so, you know. May God bless it. Amen.
Yeah.
Brownfield Chamber of Commerce, of course, they're always helpful. Judy Besser's Farmers Insurance, her son's in the house with us tonight. He's also selling insurance, too, over there. Linegar Electric Cooperative, those guys are great. McDonald's, and a lot of people say, McDonald's, why McDonald's? I had a good quarter pounder today. So anyway,
Mr. Cohen
is one of the best people. Y'all need to meet Mr. Cohen if you ever get an opportunity to. Great guy. Poca Lambro as well. They give all of our internet needs here at Town Talk, at the church, and at home as well.
Yeah.
So
second group we'll mention tonight, our good friends at State Farm Insurance here in Brownfield. Appreciate their support. The good folks at Sundown State Bank here in Brownfield and Leveland as well, and several other places. We appreciate their support. Our good friends, the Melchers, Doug and Vicki Melcher at Terry County Tractor, always so involved in our community. Appreciate those folks. Our good friend, Dr. Death, Dr. Jim Ridenour from Terry County Vet. Appreciate Dr. Jim and all he does in our community as well. Two great sets of folks there. Brownfield Regional Medical Center. And we are proud to have the CEO here with us this evening. Good to have you, man. Brownfield Funeral Home. And then one of the new arrivals in Brownfield, Stock and Pedal. And we appreciate their sponsorship this evening.
Yes, and they made two beautiful corsages for Mother's Day. One for my wife and one for the mother-in-law. I'll teach you something right there, folks. Yeah, amen to that. So before we keep moving on, some quick facts right here about United States District 19 of Texas. Of course, obviously, it's located here in West Texas in the South Plains region. Includes major cities such as Lubbock, Abilene, Big Spring, Brownwood, Snyder, Sweetwater. I'm not sure about Sweetwater, but anyway, it is okay.
Yeah.
I lived there for a couple of years, but it's all right. So current representative, of course, is Jody Arrington. I like his slogan, food, fiber, and fuel. you know, and of course he is leaving office. He's retired, and that's why we are having this election. Let's see here. Population is approximately 787,000 people, plus a few. That's a 2004 estimate. Partisan voting index is plus 25 in the Republican category, of course, in most Republican districts in Texas and in the nation. It's one of the most Republican districts in Texas and the nation. The district has not voted for a Democratic presidential candidate since 1964.
Man.
It's a long time. It's a long time. Republicans have held the seat continuously since 1985. And the district, of course, stretches from New Mexico border, state line, eastward across portions of West Texas. Of course, the economy is heavily tied to agriculture, oil and gas, cotton production, wind energy. I hope we don't talk about that. Higher education, health care. Let's see here. What else? Okay. In fact, District 19, this is the thing. Donald Trump received over 75% of the vote in District 19. It was considered, if you're going by that standard, the most conservative district in the state of Texas. Wow. In 2024. We edged out District 1, which, by the way, is represented by Nathaniel Moran. He's the congressman there, and, of course, we've already talked about this a little bit, which, ironically, Mr. Moran, he has received his BA, MBA, and his Juris Doctorate from Texas Tech University, and he and his wife would attend the church that I currently pastor. You go, Mr. Moran.
Way to pull that plug in.
I sure did. Absolutely. And, of course, the district is considered a safe Republican seat in virtually every modern election rating system. You're up next, my friend.
All right, folks, tonight's forum. Obviously, we're here this evening. We're going to kick off here shortly. The length will hopefully be 60 minutes, we're hoping, depending on how everything goes. We're going to crunch it all in here. Three-minute opening and closing statements, which will begin here in just a few minutes. We've got about 10 questions for the candidates tonight, folks, that we've put together. I concentrated on ag. Eric took care of oil, gas, and some local issues that we feel are key to most of rural West Texas. So proud to have these gentlemen here. They will have a two-minute response. We have a timekeeper that will let them know that they're down to about 15 seconds, and then we'll cut them off. There are no notes tonight. We're going to catch them off the cuff a little bit. We won't have rebuttals, and we will take two commercial breaks through this process to give everybody a chance to catch their breath a little bit. But we are very excited, again, to have you gentlemen here and to have this opportunity in Brownfield, Texas. And we hope, again, for all of you tuning in tonight live on Facebook and listening to us via the stream, great opportunity to hear questions that we hope will help you decide. This is again, one of the most important elections that we have in District 19, or have had in District 19 in a long time. So we're very excited to have them here in Brownfield. So, again, the format tonight will be opening statement. They have up to 3 minutes to do that. Their closing statements will be 3 minutes as well. Sorry, I didn't mention that a while ago. And one more time, candidate question responses will be 2 minutes, and there will be no rebuttals.
And Town Talk Media does not endorse candidates. Whether Dan or myself say anything that is not necessarily the opinion or the view of Town Talk Media. A few of those we've probably
And if you've listened to our show, we say that quite a bit.
Yes, so, we have to. Yeah. So anyway, but we do not endorse candidates. Town Talk Media does not endorse candidates. So with that.
Opening statements.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, perfect. Thank you so much.
All right, folks. Opening statements tonight, folks, we flipped a coin. Mr. Sell won to go first on opening statements, and then won to get the first question. So, Mr. Sell, we'll turn it over to you, sir.
Thanks so much, Dan, and thank you, Eric. It is so good to be here in Terry County, Texas, Brownfield, Texas, USA, heart of the 19th District, such a great region of the country that we love so dearly. So thank you for having us. It has been a true honor and privilege to be in this race, to try and represent the good people of the 19th District in Washington, D.C. I've said from the beginning, Washington, D.C. needs more West Texas. We hold true to that. Kyla's here with me tonight, looking good, babe. We've been married for 28 years. We've raised our four kids here in West Texas. I was born in Lubbock. I'm fifth generation West Texan. Family farmed north of Idaloo, between Idaloo and Petersburg. So deep roots in this area. And we just love it. I have 2 degrees, not as many as Nathaniel Moran, but 2 degrees from Texas Tech University. We are committed Red Raiders. Kyle and I actually met on the first day of college. It took me a while to win her over. I'm a slow burn, but steady wins the race, right, Kyle? And we're so proud of our heritage in this area. Of course, I got to go to Washington, D.C. with Larry Combest back in. Well, when I graduated from college, I won an internship from Texas Tech to go up there in 1995. He had been there, first Republican elected to this 19th District of Texas in 1984, started serving in 1985. He was part of the original Texas six-pack, and he rose to prominence when I was with him. He due to seniority, became chairman of the Ag Committee, and I got to be his right-hand man at the Agriculture Committee, and we accomplished some amazing things during that time. Major crop insurance rewrite. The O2 Farm Bill, which was seminal and foundational for the time, it has really served as the bill that has been built upon for the last 25 years. So just had an incredible run, but Kyle and I wanted to raise our family in West Texas, so we moved back in 2003. I went to law school. That was my second degree, and I love the study of constitutional law, property rights type of law, like water law, these issues that are so important to our district. And raising the 4 kids, I just feel like we have a level of experience and depth in this region, in the businesses that really make this region work, that can really bring an element of kind of wisdom and depth to the policymaking challenges that we all have in Washington, D.C. These are challenging times for our nation. That's part of our motivation. So when Jody, who's a very dear friend, and we've been proud to support Jody over these last 10 years, when Jody announced his desire to retire, it was really a challenge to Kyle and I, and we felt like the faithful thing to do, given the privileges that we've had, was to jump in this race and try and do a good thing for the people of West Texas and our nation. We want to be salt and light in Washington, D.C. to make our government function better for the people of this great region. So please, and look forward to the questions.
And now, Mr. Enriquez.
Well, first and foremost, Dan, Eric, Adrian, thank you so much for putting this on. It's truly such an honor and a privilege to be able to speak to voters on this capacity. Tonight, I'm joined by my beautiful family that have been campaigning with me every step of this way. And I want to start off by saying that I'm a grandson of farm workers running on the Republican primary runoff in deep red West Texas. Folks, the American dream is alive in our district, and that's the American dream that I want to fight to protect. Born and raised right here in Lubbock, Texas, and a graduate of Abilene Christian University, this community has been home my entire life. Over the past 7 years, I've built an organization not based in D.C., not based in Austin, based right here in West Texas. That organization over the past 7 years has now expanded into 6 different states with full-time employees. That has been the vehicle that has ushered in over 1 million new voters into the Republican coalition. It's for that reason that when President Trump announced his 2024 reelection campaign, he tapped me to be one of his national surrogates of his campaign. And I had the honor of campaigning in over 17 critical counties with the president, his cabinet, and members of the Trump family to make sure that Kamala Harris never touched the Oval Office. I'm a proud partner to this Trump administration and the very first Trump administration, where I helped get over 12 pieces of legislation across the finish line. Whether it was ensuring we had fair trading partners to ensure we were keeping Texas jobs, I was at the table. Whether it was cutting back regulations on small businesses, I was there at the table. Where was ensuring that we were bringing religious freedom back to the public square, I was there to help set up those commissions. It's been an honor to be mentored by also Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins for the past 10 years, being a fellow to both her Texas Public Policy Foundation and also the America First Policy Institute. When it comes to policy, I believe I've been mentored by the best in the game, President Trump and Secretary Rollins. I've also built a trade association because I'm passionate about bringing the America, Made in America brand back into the United States. That trade association has been a vehicle that brought in over $100 billion of investments into the United States. In fact, I led the very first White House North American Investment Roundtable May of last year. I'm proud of the fight that we have here in West Texas. I'm proud of the fight that I've always been in. The sanctity of life. When life was on the ballot here in West Texas, I was out there knocking on the doors, calling voters, driving them to the polls to ensure that West Texas protected unborn life. when the push of the decriminalizing marijuana was on the ballot. I was out there knocking on the doors, making the calls, driving people to the polls to ensure that drugs never flooded our streets. And when President Trump was in the fight of his life, I was proud to roll up my sleeves and campaign with him in 17 different counties. It's why Governor Abbott has endorsed his campaign. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has endorsed his campaign. The National Border Patrol Council has endorsed his campaign. Charlie Kirk's Turning Point Action has endorsed his campaign. And over a dozen of the most conservative lawmakers in Texas have endorsed his campaign.
You got me. There we go. All right, great. Guys, we're glad to have you here and look forward to tonight. I get to kick off tonight. My questions obviously predominantly are ag tonight. I can assure you that there's one question in here that I had a lot to do with. I reached out to people a lot smarter than me to make sure that we kind of covered all the bases. And so I'm very, very proud of that. And to those people that did help me, I just want to say before we get started, thank you very much for helping come up with some really good questions this evening, because a lot of ag has been covered. You guys have done a really good job of definitely covering the ag issue, obviously being in the 19th again. Ag energy is and ag and energy both are huge in our district. But Mr. Sell won the toss, so the first question, and this one's kind of lengthy. The MAHA movement has brought renewed attention to the American diet. Wheat-based staples like bread, pasta, and cereals have been central to American tables for generations. As wheat producers in the 19th watch this conversation unfold, what is your position on federal food and farm policy as it relates to supporting domestically grown commodities like wheat? And how would you ensure that nutrition and dietary policy coming out of Washington reflects sound science and doesn't unfairly put American-grown grains that require processing for human consumption at an unfair disadvantage? Sorry, that's kind of a long one, but what a way to kick off tonight.
That was a long question, and it's a really good question. It's an important question, given the prominence of this MAHA movement. And I've actually really enjoyed getting to see this. There are some great things about it. Like, man, Dan, I love the fact. I mean, you can see by my build, I love to eat. I love bread. I love meat. And one of the great things is that the Trump administration has done is they've inverted the food pyramid to where all the fun things are at top, right? Dairy products, beef. And I think that is those are, you know, the reality is for too long, in the name of sound science, some really criminal things have been done to where it was kind of pushing people toward some ultra-processed foods and things like that. So I love getting back to the more natural kind of foods, and I think that's good for us. And you know, Kyle and I have always done a lot of cooking at home and building our own kind of staples from the ground up. We actually market some of our own beef, which is a lot of fun. So I think there are a lot of opportunities here for growers around this district, and we're seeing some more and more of that. In fact, I was at a venue here in Brownfield today that is doing some really remarkable things to kind of brand some of these staple products and get a better return to the farm families by going up the value chain and marketing their own products. So some of that stuff is really cool. Now, for wheat especially, I think there are some real issues that the U.S. wheat industry has to confront. But this is a staple that's biblical. It's been part of our life and culture forever. In France, you know, bread is still kind of a key staple, and people are healthy. If there are some issues that need to be addressed, I think we have to be honest and confront those. Lee Zeldin is doing a great job in his role as the EPA administrator. There's an important kind of blend of science and nutrition, and we can all do a better job in our families going forward.
Thank you, sir. Abraham, would you like for me to reread that question, because it is very lengthy?
I think I got it. Let me take it. I get it. Dan, and I, you know, I'm excited for what Secretary Kennedy is doing with the MAHA movement. I'm even more excited that it's in co-partnership with the USDA, with Secretary Brooke Rollins, to ensure that farmers and ranchers are not left out of that conversation. I'm proud to be endorsed by Representative Kerry Isaac, who is the chair of the MAHA caucus here in Texas. But I think that we can say that there have been some conversations where our small farmers and ranchers have been left out of those policy meetings. I think whoever represents this district needs to be bold enough to be able to walk into some of those conversations and say that Congressional District 19, the farmers and ranchers in our community, are not being invited into those conversations. I had a front row seat at, you know, what happens when you let free enterprise roll ahead within our ag industry, with one of my business partners being 44 Farms, the state's largest black Angus beef producers. And when some regulations were cut back and ensuring that organic doesn't just go for the four meat packers that monopolize our industry, it allowed them to open up and expand their market. And now they are able to, sell in Walmarts. All because, you know, someone from D.C., a consultant in the lobbying industry from D.C., were left out of that equation, and real farmers and ranchers were brought in. So that's my commitment. I think in every single conversation that a policy comes out of MAHA, a farmer and rancher from West Texas needs to be in that conversation. I'm proud to call Secretary Kennedy a good friend. In fact, we co-chaired President Trump's Hispanic inaugural ball together. He is has perfect Spanish talent. And so built a relationship with him there, and I'm excited to bring that relationship here to West Texas and ensure that West Texas farmers and ranchers aren't left out of that conversation.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Question number two. This will go to Abraham first tonight. Some have recently questioned publicly the legitimacy of agriculture commodity organizations that lobby for agriculture in the region. The belief that most of these commodity groups are corrupted by big corporate ag. Now, do you agree with this opinion? And if so, what would you do as a representative to address this?
100%. I agree with that. As I'm traveling all through Congressional District 19, 33 beautiful counties, the reason why we're building a coalition of hundreds of small farmers and ranchers is because they feel like big ag lobbyists have left them out of this conversation. And the fact that Secretary Rawlins took to the press corps the other day and behind the press secretary podium said that she's taking on the four meat packers, I think it requires that whoever wins this race be bold enough to say that they're going to fight for the small farmer and rancher and not for who's pocketing their playbook. I think the reason why farmers and ranchers are in the position that they're in right now is because of the lobbying industry, which is why on day one that we announced this campaign, we announced that we weren't going to take a cent, a penny, a special interest money into this campaign, because on day one, we want to be accountable to only the people of West Texas. My opponent here is completely bankrolled by lobbying interest in D.C., as he is a lobbying Washington-based lobbyist. And look, for the debate of you need to lobby to ensure policy gets passed, I feel like I can counter that, because as a partner to two Trump administrations, getting over a dozen pieces of legislation across the finish line, I was able to do that without being a registered lobbyist, without donating a cent to a radical Democrat.
Okay. Tom, would you like for me to reread the question?
I think I've got it. Okay. And this is a really important question for the 19th District of Texas. First, on this issue of fundraising and being completely bankrolled, we have raised a lot of money from the district, from good people. And you can contrast that if you read the FEC reports to Abraham's fundraising, which has largely come outside of the district. This big versus small issue in agriculture has been misused by opponents of farm families across the district forever. This is the number one playbook of the Environmental Working Group, which tries to shame and really believes that we should move our U.S. production offshore, which would make us more vulnerable as a nation. And look, you know, when in West Texas, we are big agriculture. Our farms cover thousands of acres, and our farm families put enormous, capital. They put their chips in the middle of the table every year to produce something that is very fundamental and foundational to our economy, but also to our health, to our culture, to our national security. And that is owing to the courage and the boldness of our family farmers who take this risk every year. And I love them all, big, small, conventional, organic. And we need all. We've got to take care of the basics, and that creates some niches in our market, like I talked about earlier. The fact, and the last thing I got to address, this idea that our organizations, like Plains Cotton Growers, like the Texas corn producers, like the Texas Southwest cattle raisers, are corrupt, is a terrible and dangerous charge for my opponent to make. These are great organizations that represent the families in this district, and I am so proud to have their endorsement. And I'm going to fight for all of our agricultural producers in Washington, D.C.
Okay, thank you. All right, we roll back to Tom for this question. Congressman Arrington, a couple of weeks ago, proposed a bill called the No Feds in West Texas Act in an effort to stop the Mule Shoe Wildlife Refuge expansion that was approved during the Biden administration. What do you see as the potential impact of this bill?
Well, compliments to Jody Arrington on sponsoring this bill and on leading the charge to kind of stop this creep of federal jurisdiction. Remember in the Biden administration, there were so many kind of terrible things that were done. But all of it was kind of built into this Green New Deal and an expansion of federal authority in places where they really have no business. The Mule Shoe Wildlife Refuge is a great example of that. And I actually went to some town hall meetings in that region where the people of Bailey County came out and Palmer County. It was a great gathering in Littlefield, Texas, actually. And the voices were you know, well-spoken. Monty Edwards and some others, Brian Baker, brought this focus, this needed focus to stop the expansion. Remember, in the Biden administration, they actually had this, I think it was 30 by 30. They were trying to expand federal lands by some 30 million acres across the West. And it's just anathema to what we stand for as Americans and certainly as Texans, where private property rights are just absolutely dear. I believe, that the land is best stewarded by private landowners who want to pass it on to their those who would come after them better than it was passed to them. This is what we call stewardship, and it's a critical part of what we do in agriculture, in the West, in our businesses. This is the ethic that truly makes America great, and it's best done by the hands, by the private hands of the people. We got to promote entrepreneurialism and stewardship and creativity, and we don't need Washington, D.C., and federal control is never the answer for the good of our culture going forward. So kudos to Jody Arrington again on that bill, and I'm gonna try and take up that flag in service in Congress going forward.
Abraham, would you like me to reread the question, or are you good?
I'll take a nag at it again. A great question. I think it's a great first step. First and foremost, I've actually outraged Mr. Sal as it pertains to in-district and in-state funds. Most of his funds come from K Street in D.C., and let the record reflect, he did say he would not go to battle with big corporate lobbying, which is a direct effect of why 200,000 small farmers and ranchers have gone out of business. When I look at ensuring that federal government doesn't come to D.C., this is why I am running, because I believe that we should be exporting West Texas to the nation and not bringing D.C. here. On a debate stage in Big Spring just a couple weeks ago, my opponent said he was excited to bring D.C. to West Texas with his big policy friends that he knows coming to tell us how to do policy and shape policy here in West Texas. I believe that we should actually expand and piggyback on what Congressman Arrington is doing and expand the Regulatory Flexibility Act to actually ensure that we're reining in on government overreach as it pertains to our farmers and ranchers here in our community and also our small businesses. Some of the worst offenders of that is EPA, OSHA, Department of Labor. So I'm going to take on that mantle, continue running with that banner, and ensure that we're actually expanding and codifying some of the things that the Regulatory Flexibility Act does to ensure that we're protecting small farmers and ranchers, small businesses, small organizations that are just trying to do right here in West Texas.
Super. All right. We will now rotate back to Abraham. Cotton is a staple commodity in the 19th Congressional District. As a member of Congress, it is imperative to improve farm policy. Do you have any thoughts on how to improve the current farm bill as it pertains to cotton?
Yeah, I believe it's important for the Senate to take what the House has passed as a farm bill very serious. I think we have until September 30th to ensure that is codified and ensuring that we're providing and producing something for our farmers and ranchers here. I think the biggest enemies to this fight is actually, Chinese commodities and Brazilian dumping here in West Texas. The fact that, insurance is 69 cents. That's the floor for our farmers and ranchers that I think we shouldn't weaken. Something that I'm proud of is ensuring that we should have this conversation as it relates not just to ag policy, but to foreign affairs and trade policy. When I took a partnership with the White House in 2015, the amount of wheat that Bimbo, the world's largest bakery manufacturing, bought from our farmers and ranchers here in the United States was roughly around 40%. Today, in 2016, that is now about 70%. So I think that that conversation should not stop in the House and the Senate, but we should apply it to every trading partner that we have in the United States to ensure that we're actually increasing our right to our farmers and ranchers as it pertains to cotton.
Super. Okay. Did the buzzer go off?
On.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I was like, wait a minute. I don't think we're there yet.
I do apologize. That was e-dispatch, and so here in a minute you might hear something else. So
no problem at all.
And you can't shut it off. So
yeah, let's talk about cotton. First, I want to say this is where groups like Plains Cotton Growers are so vitally important. And I hate the fact that Abe has said he doesn't trust or believes that those groups are not out for the best interests of our family farms. They absolutely are. Cody Besant, the work he does is remarkable. Steve Verrett before him. Also, just want to correct, you know, Abe loves to say that we outraised him 10-1, but then he somehow concocts that he has outraised us from the district, which is just absolutely untrue. And I'm sad about that. But let's talk about cotton. One, we had significant increases to cotton in the One Big Beautiful Bill and in the reference price associated with cotton. So going into this year, cotton growers are in a better place. Man, we are praying for rain because cotton prices are actually elevating. 69 cents is the price election in crop insurance, but if the price is elevated, Abe, you should know this, that will actually go up through the course of the year. We also have a safety net of a higher reference price for seed cotton, which is providing a lot more insurance for our growers this year. So, man, pray for rain. Let me encourage all viewers tonight. Let's pray for rain because we need a banger this year. We need a bumper crop. It'd be so good for our region economically and for our farmers to heal up some of their wounds. The other key thing is on the trade front, and there's a great bill that's been introduced in Congress that we've done a lot of work on called the Buy American Cotton Act. And what that tries to do is create some incentives for the sourcing of U.S. cotton in the selling of U.S. retail textiles. And one, we all need to wear more cotton. Let me say that to the viewers as well. I'm going to be a champion for cotton in Washington, D.C., because it's so important to our region. But that Buy American Cotton Act not only incentivizes the reimport of U.S.-grown cotton, but also the manufacturing of cotton here in the United States. We need to reestablish the textile industry in the United States of America, and the Buy American Cotton Act can be consequential for that. So we're going to be supporting all those bills and be a champ for cotton.
Thank you. All right, we're down to two questions left, gentlemen, on the ag side. Let's talk about our grocery store's perimeter for a minute. The proteins, milk and dairy and produce. Closing the Mexican border for protection of from the screw worm invasion has had an impact locally, as Lubbock Feeders is shuttering its operation after 70 years. The 60 to 70% reduction in cattle from Mexico has made it impossible to continue. Meanwhile, the consumer has seen prices at the grocery store for beef and other products continue to climb. Your thoughts on what we can do to help the consumer side while ensuring that our farmers and ranchers can reliably and affordably put food on our table? Mr. Sell?
This is a really great question, and it's challenging. There is no simple answer. I'll say that to start. It is a tragedy what's happened to Lubbock Feeders. And the screw worms kind of creep northward is alarming for every cow-calf, every cattle producer in our great state and region, and really all across the United States. We don't want to have to go back to the days of old where the screw worm was an absolute scourge on our nation's beef herd and industry. Our numbers in the cow herd is also at all-time lows. Now, there are some interesting things that are helping the beef market right now. One of the most important is beef on dairy. And the dairy industry as an economic driver in this region has just been a game changer and a positive for farmers in this region who are growing feed for those dairies. But they're also producing milk, and they're also, with modern technology, they're able to produce a lot of beef cattle out of those dairy herds. So that is a big piece of what's helping kind of moderate this marketplace for the consumers. Now, to the credit of the consumers, even with this record low beef herd, we are continuing to consume a lot of beef. Whereas every ag economist you know, for years has been warning if beef prices get too high, you're going to crash demand. And there are alternative sources of protein, right? There are everything from beans to pork to chicken. But the U.S. consumer wants to continue to consume beef. I love that as a cow-calf producer. And we've got to be careful. One of the other realities that we have in our nation is we are losing pasture primarily to suburban development and urban sprawl. So we just don't have the acres that we once had to continue to grow the beef herd. We also got to pray for rain. It's not as simple as just adding the numbers. You have to have the pasture to feed those cattle. So this is a complex problem. We got to be careful. We got to protect our U.S. producers first to reestablish the herd in the United States.
Abraham, would you like for me to reread your question?
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to clear up something that Mr. Sell keeps trying to pin me against. Amazing organizations that do great for our farmers and ranchers here, and I never said I was against any of those organizations. Very clear, I am always against big corporate lobbying. The same people that Secretary Brooke Rollins is challenging every single day, that's who I'm against as well, not the people that Tom Sell keeps trying to pin me. The answer to this is it's complex, but I think it's somewhat simple in the time that we're living in right now, because USMCA, a trade renegotiation that I was proud to be a partner with during the first Trump administration, goes into renegotiation as we are speaking. And I think that we should take advantage of that. And whoever wins this congressional race needs to immediately start developing some relationship with Ambassador Jameson Greer, someone I am deeply close to, as a member of the USMCA Trade Negotiation Committee. And I think it's important that as we're talking about the commission, to ensure that we are sidelining some policies that actually make it easier for us to trade with some of those domestic and foreign things that we can import into the United States, and specifically into Texas, so that our small families here in West Texas don't feel it every single time they go to the grocery store. So ensuring that we are going through the guidelines that Secretary Rollins has established to ensure that screwworm doesn't come into Texas, but also taking into effect the renegotiation that we have with USMCA to ensure that we are making Mexico a fair trading partner, not just a free trading partner, and that families don't feel that at the grocery store.
Thank you, sir. Fair. All right, gentlemen. We are to the last question in this first segment of tonight's forum. Abraham, you will get this one first. In recent weeks, and this is not technically ag, I guess, gentlemen, but it has become something that, and you'll recognize this when I say it. In recent weeks, we've heard various members of the Democratic Party, one more regularly in Hakeem Jeffries, saying that once they take control of Congress, they will work to impeach President Trump and work to nullify his executive orders. I believe both of you gentlemen have visited with our good friend Steve Friscup. And he asked both of you this question, and I'm going to ask it again because I feel like tonight in this forum, especially when we're talking about West Texas and the questions that we've already talked about on ag, that it's very important. But what would you do to codify the president's executive orders?
Yeah, in order to do that, we have to have a majority in the House. So whoever wins this race needs to ensure that they're rolling up their sleeves and they're going to at-risk congressional toss-up seats to ensure that we're delivering a majority for President Trump. Only one of us at this table has actually already done that, flipping over a dozen congressional seats for President Trump and actually campaigning with him in over 17 purple and blue districts and flipping them all to red. So to ensure that we're codifying President Trump's policies, we first have to give him a majority in the House. And that starts with being able to go and rally the vote and ensure that we're building a coalition of Republican voters that make it huge and we have a big Republican voter turnout. But another thing is being very clear on where we stand on the issues. My opponent here says some stances on policies, but to the tune of $40,000 he's donated to radical Democrats who have co-sponsored and led bills to transgender our kids, open up our borders, take our guns away, and actually lead the fight to impeach the president. So it's really difficult for me to take serious someone who wants to give the majority of the House to President Trump when he's actually given some of his hard-earned money to radical Democrats who actually do want to impeach the president on day one. It's very important that in deep red West Texas, we don't send someone who dances with the devil on the other side.
You good?
Okay. Go. Thanks. With all due respect to Abe, I've never met someone who takes so much credit having done so little. He's never been employed in actually these. He's never been entrusted. He has brought Mexican impresarios under Bienvenidos to Washington, D.C., but he doesn't register as a lobbyist, although simple rules are if you're paid and you have a contact with a covered official, you should register as a lobbyist. So there's a lot of just falsehood in this big facade that's been created. My Republican bona fides are unquestionable. And I'm so proud to have been endorsed by Majority Leader Scalise, by the Majority Whip, Tom Emmer, by the Chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan, and numerous other members of Congress, including the Chairman of the House Agriculture Committee and Senate Agriculture Committee, G.T. Thompson and John Bozeman. I have been a champion and a fighter for the Republican Party and President Trump. I'm endorsed by Monica De La Cruz, who's in one of those vulnerable districts down in the valley. And it is an important point that whoever wins this race needs to represent it in a way that is actually generous and builds into some of the more vulnerable districts across this land. We are so fortunate to live in West Texas where the people are conservative. And I'm proud to have been a part of kind of building this strong Republican majority right here in West Texas in real and practical ways, not in just in kind of making claims of a million new voters or something like that. That is, you can't prove it and you can't disprove it. But we have worked at this for 25 years and have built the Republican majority and built the America First policies that President Trump has absolutely championed in a remarkable way. These are the policies that are best for the United States of America and for all the people. And this district has to be a district that engages in the more vulnerable districts across this nation to build our Republican majority, to get these executive orders enacted into law.
Okay, gentlemen. Quite a first round, folks. We have got the second half of our show. We're going to go ahead and take a quick set of commercial breaks, folks. Stay with us, and we'll be back with more of the Forum for the 19th.
Whether you're hauling tools and equipment to a job site or your family to a weekend getaway, count on the lineup of versatile, hardworking Ford trucks and vans to get the job done. Their rugged capability, outstanding performance, and legendary dependability earn them the label of built Ford tough. Find your Ford truck or van at Brownfield Ford, located at 1708 Lubbock Road in Brownfield, and go to www.brownfieldautomotive.com to check out their inventory.
In Terry County, experience matters, and so does hard work. Elvis Rodriguez has spent 20 years serving the citizens of Brownfield with dedication, integrity, and pride. Elvis is a proven loader operator who understands our roads, our equipment, and what it takes to get the job done right. He's served in leadership roles as assistant supervisor, supervisor, and foreman with hands-on experience in road repair, patching, seal coating, and ditch maintenance. Elvis Rodriguez believes in strong values, faith, honesty, responsibility, and service. He's a man of integrity, a dedicated worker, and someone who always puts people first. This Republican primary, vote Elvis Rodriguez for Terry County Commissioner, Precinct 4. Experience you can trust, service you can count on.
Political paid advertisement by Elvis Rodriguez for Commissioner.
As we look forward to spending more time outdoors with the warmer weather, Lintigar Electric Cooperative has a few tips to stay safe. Make sure to look up before climbing trees or raising any equipment near power lines. When using power tools outdoors, make sure they are grounded and use extension cords approved for outdoor use. Learn to play and work around electricity as safely as possible. Contact Lintigar Electric Cooperative at 806-561-4588 for more safety tips. Lintigar Electric Cooperative, owned and operated by those we serve.
West Texas is the best Texas, from the panhandle to the Trans-Pecos, from the Llano Estacado all the way down to Big Bend. There's something in the dust out here, there's something in the wind. Not like Dallas, Texas, more like Crystal Palace, Texas. All the lawyers and the housewives drive around in a Lexus. They're fighting over money, fighting over...
All right, folks, we are back. this is the voice of Eric Ward now instead of Dan, and it's my turn to do the questions and everything like that, and hopefully I can do a good job here. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, what we'll have to do right fast. Anyway, they didn't know this, but we are playing West Texas is the Best Texas from the Panhandlers. Love that song. So anyway, why not, right? Why not? Dan, I am going to mute you, if that's
please.
Okay. Yeah. Just
that way I can get a drink of water.
Okay, now now whose turn, who's it going to this time? On question six, so go back to Tom. All right. Yes, sir. Tom, Mr. Tom. So
yes,
obviously we live in a rural Texas county. Healthcare, believe it or not, is a hot topic. We see older folks leaving smaller communities to move to places like Lubbock or Abilene to be closer to the larger hospitals and medical care facilities. Again, this is not just a Brownfield or Terry County thing. This is all of rural West Texas, and, of course, rural Texas in general. Of course, there are several rural hospitals in the 19th. Speaking of workforce with healthcare, rural hospitals are challenged to recruit and retain health professionals, such as doctors, nurses, and other licensed professionals. What could you do as a member of Congress to improve that situation?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's such an important for the entire 19th District of Texas. 33 counties, 30,158 square miles in this great, vast district that is so highly productive and so important to our nation and also to the world for the things that we produce. And our communities have to have that critical infrastructure of healthcare. And if you talk to the hospitals, and I've spent a lot of time. This is a deep and complex subject, and there are some real problems. And if you talk to the hospitals in Lubbock and in Abilene, they've told me how critical the rural infrastructure is as well. So, and the problems are unique. And this is often in the United States of America where, look, in the U.S. Congress, of the 435 seats nationwide, about 365 are dominated by urban and suburban districts. And the economics of healthcare, like everything else, is just different in the cities and the suburbs than it is in the rural areas. We have to have policies that stand by our rural hospitals. I talked about one today with a great group, just about the critical access designation. And you have to be more than 35 miles away from another critical care hospital. And those lines just get arbitrary. We have got to stand by our rural hospitals who are providing this critical health. There are also important laws on the books to try and give to attract doctors. And with forgiveness of student loans and other incentives that allow them to come into the rural areas. And so oftentimes when people do come to the rural towns and cities, they fall in love with it because there is just a special charm to the life out here in the big country and in the southern plains. So we've got to stand by those policies. We've also got to stand by our doctors, our critical infrastructure, the hospitals, and the patients in this very complex debate. And I'm going to continue to work, dig into these issues so I can be a champion for rural health care.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sell. Abraham, did I need to repeat the question?
I got it.
Okay. All right.
I've had the privilege of speaking to leadership of every single hospital in our district, and we're very blessed to have the talent that we have here in Congressional District 19. But on the top line, something that I've found kind of very just blatantly out there is the fact that there's almost no conversation between federal and state. Oftentimes, leadership and hospitals are trying to figure out how to work under the regulations of state policy and then income federal policy, and they're trying to figure out what doors to swing in or swing out, and the nurses aren't actually able to do their job. So I think one of the first things is actually just decreasing federal regulations as it pertains to rural health care and ensuring that the state does what it does. I think Texas lawmakers do a great job of ensuring that they're there for our rural health care. And then also increasing investments in telehealth. I think that is the number one thing that on the federal side we should be doing. So getting out of the way, getting federal government out of the way, ensuring that state and federal have great conversations, which is why having a relationship with every state senator, every state representative in this district is very critical. But then also ensuring that we're fighting for investments in telehealth. I think that those two steps is the right direction to ensure that we are showing faith for our rural health care.
All right. Well, that's a kind of a good segue into this next question then, because you're talking about federal versus the state there. So what is your opinions about Medicare Advantage and an alternative traditional Medicare coverage? Because it is a federal subsidy, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. I mean, we pay for it, obviously, yeah. But it does come from the federal government.
Yeah, look, I think we need to protect Medicare, Medicaid for what it is and ensure that those that are on it – It's our job to ensure that we're not using it as a bargaining chip every single time Congress comes to the table. But really, the actual question here is, when are we going to rein in on government spending? That truly is the problem. So I think it's important to use the Congressional Review Act to rein in on government spending to ensure that we're not using Medicare and Medicaid as a bargaining chip. Those that are paid into it, those that have it, I think that we shouldn't be using them as a way to let the other side, which my opponent has funded, to get their way. So I think that's kind of one of the main problems is, before we have that conversation, we need to cut in on government spending and using the Congressional Review Act to ensure that we're holding Congress within itself and government three-letter agencies accountable for their spending.
Okay. Mr. Sales, do I need to repeat the question, sir?
I think I got it, about Medicare Advantage, right?
Yes, versus traditional Medicare coverage, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, first, I failed to mention, President Trump in the One Big Beautiful Bill and the leaders in Congress in crafting this, what was really an amazing bill, enacted into law July 4th of 2025, the 249th anniversary of our great nation. So excited to be in this 2026, where we're going to celebrate 250 years of this great experiment in our constitutional democratic republic. That One Big Beautiful Bill contained $50 billion for rural health care, and that's really critical, because it's the economics that I mentioned earlier. It's just different for rural infrastructure to maintain it, and we've got to invest in it going forward. And so that's critical. With respect to Medicare Advantage, I know it's in talking to hospital districts across this 19th district, it's a challenge. It's a challenge when all of a sudden the reimbursement rates are being negotiated by insurance companies are constantly trying to hammer the providers. They're trying to play doctor and kind of allocate what can be an approved procedure or not. And that decision needs to be made between the doctor and the patient. And the infrastructure that's in our rural counties needs to be there to support it. And Medicare Advantage, while it has some benefits, it is creating a real challenge for our rural hospital districts. The final thing I'd mention here is just, I think President Trump has really led the way with his great health care plan, where he identifies this problem of one, too high drug prices. He's already created Trump RX to try and get at that, but also the challenge of the insurance industries that tend to dominate healthcare right now and have driven up the prices. I've never made a claim, thank goodness, praise the Lord, on our insurance policy, and we have self-funded this, but our rates continue to increase every year, and I know consumers and patients across the district are facing that. So we've got to stand by the consumers, the patients, our infrastructure, the hospitals, and the doctors.
All right, one more rural health care question, then we'll move on to some other oil and gas and AI. Oh, yeah. Anyway, so they're supposed to laugh out there in the audience, but anyways, whatever. So speaking about closures, rural providers serve elderly populations often. So they are vulnerable to federal budget pressure, going back to the federal talking point again here. What can be done to keep organizations like Brownfield Regional Medical Center viable?
Yeah, well, it's a good question and a good opportunity to kind of reiterate some of this. I mean, it is a challenge in rural America. So in urban and suburban areas, the rate is like one doctor every 450 or 460 people. In rural areas, it's one doctor for every 1,200 people. And they're spread out over a bigger distance, and they don't come through as much. It is a really challenging economy, and that's what we have to just realize in this. It's why we need a fighter in Washington, D.C. from the 19th District of Texas who knows his way around and will actually kind of stand up. And my practice, and Abe loves to kind of throw it under the bus, but I've been so proud to represent rural America and farm families across this nation. And we're constantly in this battle of building coalitions where you're in a Congress where so much of it is dominated by the urban and suburban areas. You have to be creative, and you have to really articulate why it is that what goes on in the vast 19th District of Texas is so important to our nation and to our world, and be able to articulate and fight for those policies that are so critical, whether that's transportation funding or whether it's on issues like rural health care. So I think President Trump has led the way in a good way with that $50 billion that was contained in the One Big Beautiful Bill. Of course, that's being allocated by our state of Texas right now. But also in the great healthcare plan, where he talks about trying to rein in the control of the insurance companies, all the noses that are currently in the trough in the healthcare front. And I think it is important, and Abe acknowledged this, to also address the overspending in certain areas. We can do that in a way to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse in the system, but stand by our patients and our doctors in the process.
Abe, do I need to repeat?
Yes, please.
Okay,
yes.
Okay, all right. Not a problem. We're talking about closures in rural health care. And, of course, rural providers serve elderly populations often, mm-hmm. and often so they are vulnerable to mm-hmm. the federal budget pressure. Mm-hmm. What can be done to keep organizations like Brownfield Regional Medical Center viable?
Well, the immediate thing that comes to my mind is just even out the playing field. And I don't throw Tom's practice under the bus. He says I've never held a job. All he's done has been a lobbyist. So I don't throw that under the bus. What I throw under the bus is the allocations of thousands of dollars to Democrats, because I don't know how you're going to be able to go toe-to-toe with them when you're funding them. Even out the playing field, right? I believe that my time in how I've seen Congress works is my partnership to the White House is oftentimes you have these big, big corporate entities that have million, billion-dollar budgets to be able to throw their entire consultants and lobbying class onto D.C. and get the fair share or their share of the cut from the policies that actually benefit them. And that yet you have rural West Texas that doesn't have the $1 billion to be able to get big pharma in there to get what they want. And so I follow the lead of President Trump and Secretary Rawlins and Secretary Kennedy, who don't like working with lobbyists and consultants. They like actually working with the actual organizations and the people on the ground. So as a member of Congress, I think it's important to take that pledge and ensure that you're telling your voters and the people of your district that you won't be tailored to lobbyists and consultants that come knocking on your door, but to the actual organizations and the great people of your district every single time you're fighting for them when it comes to that budget. I think that's my answer, is to ensure that you're evening out the playing field, because it's not fair for big pharma to have more rights than, you know, our small rural healthcare providers out here in West Texas.
All right. All right. Moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about oil and gas here, obviously, because we're, you know, also oil and gas. Mm-hmm. It was reported yesterday that between 170 and 190 ships are currently heading toward the U.S. Gulf Coast to pick up crude oil or LNG. Crude oil and natural gas production in the U.S. has been stagnant for most of last year, and exports are growing week after week, according to the United States Energy Department data, which is under Trump right now. Additionally, rig counts continue to show the nation's exploration and production companies have very little interest in developing program and increased drilling for oil or natural gas since the beginning of last year. So we must remember that energy independence does not mean the same thing as energy price independence. It means that we can produce enough or nearly enough energy to fulfill our own needs. But pricing is global. So we all get hit no matter who we are and what production stands. So here's the question. If elected, how would you ensure that West Texas, sorry, that's not right. that's not the right one. I'm sorry. Here we go. What specific steps, if you were to get elected to the 19th, would you take to encourage expanded oil and natural gas production in West Texas to meet the growing global energy demand? And do you believe Texas energy exports can remain sustainable long-term economic opportunity for the district and for the nation.
I do believe that we can keep them sustainable. You know, it's been quite the journey being able to campaign more so in our, Andrews County out there in Big Spring and Andrews, hearing from our producers out there. But look, I think step one is never again should Republicans ever fall for funding the Inflation Reduction Act, which is actually a huge Green New Scam funding. My opponent here actually went on an interview and said there's actually some pretty good things in the Inflation Reduction Act. That's the problem that we have with moderate, weak Republicans, is that they're able to vote for something because of the top lines. It looks great. It sounds great. They're able to, you know, go back home and say they voted for something that's going to bring inflation down. And yet in reality, we're still trying to undo today what that Inflation Reduction Act did passed in. So I think that as someone that's going to represent the great district of Congressional District 19, which has some great oil and gas and energy producers, you have to hold the line. You have to be able to go against even some of your moderate Republican colleagues and say just because it's good for the name doesn't mean it's good for our people. And I think that that's step number one, ensuring that you are bold enough and able enough to say that there is no more funding for Green New Scam deals then, now, or ever.
All right.
Finished?
Okay. I just want to make sure. I didn't want to cut anybody off. Tom, do I need to
The question was what steps can be done to expand oil and gas production from the Permian, from these great oil fields and gas fields in West Texas? And I love this. I mean, we do indeed bless our nation and our world every day with our exports of agriculture, of energy, certainly. And I really appreciate President Trump and his all-of-the-above energy approach. I've been involved in energy policy for a lot of years. My brother, Clay, was Deputy Secretary of Energy. And these policies are so critically important. They're foundational to the overall economy. Texas actually, I think, set a record last year for its oil and gas production. Is it sustainable? I believe so. Can we do a better job with some of the resources that come out, some of the produced water? Can we clean it up? Water is such a critical resource for our region, and we've got to do a better job of conserving, but also cleaning and creating new sources of fresh water that can serve our region in so many ways. There's also good uses for energy in, like right now, one of the big challenges we're facing as a nation is a fertilizer shortage that is affecting our producers. Fertilizer prices are very high right now. They have skyrocketed this year. Could we actually have more domestic fertilizer production? Should we? The answer is absolutely. And could we harness some of the natural gas that's often flared off out here in West Texas to produce more fertilizer domestically? And would there be secondary benefits to that for our economy, for our security? The answer is absolutely yes. And so we've got to continue with this bold approach. And this is where, President Trump actually talks about it as energy dominance. And let's go. Let's move the needle forward on an all-of-the-above approach. And that's traditional oil and gas. That's biofuels that are so critical for this area. That is nuclear. Geothermal. There's so many great areas of discovery. And this is what makes America truly great, this investing in the future, conducting business to bless our region and our nation and the world.
Wow, perfect timing there.
Anyway, thanks, man.
So next question, if elected, how would you ensure that West Texas has a seat at the table when Congress debates national energy policy?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, that is the obligation of someone who represents the 19th District of Texas. We have a lot of great Republican members from this district. One of my dear friends, a guy who has supported our campaign, is August Pfluger, who represents the district just to the south and the heart of the Permian Basin. He serves on the Energy and Commerce Committee and is a great leader there and really a leader for our nation, and I hope and I think he has a good potential to rise into Republican leadership going forward. And I think it's important for the Texas delegation to work together. It's where I so value the relationships I have with so many of the Texas delegation in Washington, D.C., that are working hard to make sure that the America First industries that are embodied in our West Texas districts are represented with force at the highest levels. Ronnie Jackson is also doing a great job in the district to our north. And we're blessed in this very conservative state to be the leader for good America First policies, to support President Trump in this this incredibly important America First policy initiative, to do the basics right and then get out of the way. That's what every voter wants in this district. So how exactly? You know, it's going to be I plan to be a strong voice to get on a committee, to do the hard work there, to bring a level of focus. It's one of the nice things with Kyla, being empty nesters this year, to be able to go to Washington, D.C. with just a clear mind and a focus on the policies that matter for these 33 counties that make up the 19th District of Texas. This is what has been our brand in doing work in Washington, D.C., representing family farms and representing rural interests. It's been our brand for the last 25 years, and we tend to build upon that and just be a force for the industries that are so important to this region.
All right. Do I need to read?
How do you have a seat at the table? It's very simple. You just show up. This president, this administration, this cabinet knows every single person who was in the trenches when President Trump was in the fight for his life. And the reason why we're going to have a seat at the table in this conversation is because I was in the trenches with Secretary Wright campaigning for the president to ensure that Kamala Harris never got into the Oval Office. Meanwhile, my opponent was nowhere to be found. He spoke about Congressman Pfluger, Congressman Jackson, two great friends of mine who actually helped me set up the White House North American Investment Roundtable, the same roundtable that he just jabbed and said I was bringing VMware and Presidio's members. All of them were American CEOs, so a jab at that investment trade association, a jab at my organization, is a jab at both of those congressmen who helped me set up that organization and that trade roundtable. So I think when you go to D.C., this cabinet is incredibly close. You're talking about a year of a president that survived two assassination attempts, over 90 federal cases, the entire mainstream media against him. This cabinet is incredibly close. And right now, if I knock on Secretary Wright's door, there's going to be an answer. You know why? Because we were in the trenches in 17 critical counties to ensure that he has a job today. So that it's an honor of a lifetime to be able to open up that door and those relationships to the people of West Texas that allow me to export West Texas values over the last 7 years.
All right. Well, that was quick. That was good. All right. Two more questions left. These were kind of off the cuff, but it is what it is, right? Mm-hmm. So we'll be moving back. We'll go back to Abraham here. And this is about artificial intelligence. We've obviously is something that's been kind of, it's not new, but it is new about data centers and things like that are covering a lot of places and stuff. In Terry County, as far as the city of Brownfield, we have not been asked about anything as far as Terry County. I was talking to the county judge the other day, and they haven't been approached yet either. Not saying we will, not saying we won't. We just don't know yet until someone approaches us. But getting back to artificial intelligence. So, again, artificial intelligence is a large-scale data centers and large-scale data centers are rapidly expanding across Texas. How can West Texas benefit economically from AI infrastructure while also protecting our power grid and, most importantly, our water resources?
I love this question because it excites me. The investment coming into West Texas, the idea that West Texas can beat China in the war of AI gets me thrilled and excited. However, West Texas must be a partner to these data centers coming in and not buried by their unregulated policy that actually, you know, takes water supplies from farmers and ranchers, ensures that young families are priced out of their homes. Had a great roundtable with members of the Haskell community who were saying we were promised that X amount of jobs that were coming to Haskell County through this data centers were going to be from our community. Almost all of them, every single one of them, are actually coming in from California using the H-1B visas. That's a problem, right? And so I think that whoever wins this congressional race needs to be bold enough to say we want West Texas to be at the table and beat China as it pertains to the conversation of AI. But we also must not be beholden to any special interest group that wants unregulated AI investment to come into West Texas. To the tune of $700,000 has entered this race through my opponent's campaign of a super PAC that wants unregulated AI investment into West Texas, meaning for our farmers and ranchers who are concerned with their water supply. to a young family who is unsure of if they're going to be able to, continue with their mortgage here in West Texas, or to my friends out in Haskell County who are concerned about the people coming in from California and taking jobs away. Under my opponent, there will be no regulations of those investments coming into West Texas because he has to answer for $700,000 worth of favors the day he gets to D.C. Me, on the other hand, I want to lead that fight. I want to make sure we're working closely with our state and local representatives to ensure that our water supply is protected, housing market is protected, and our electric grid is protected as well. And that means no investment from unregulated super PACs.
All right. Tom, do I need to read it again?
I think I've got it.
Okay.
And thank you. And Dan, I appreciate your admonition. Abraham loves to kind of attack these things. And it's just kind of the desperate pleas of a desperate campaign. But look, I am proud of those who've supported so many individuals. But also, even this super PAC that came in, and it's not, we both have interviewed and talked with folks.
No, we didn't. I didn't.
Let Tom finish, please.
Yeah, but it's they make a judgment as to who they think has kind of the right measure and the right temperament and the right character and integrity to advance interests, thoughtfully. With depth and intelligence, so I'm proud to have their support. It doesn't take away from the fact that this is a race, and President Trump has made this a priority for the United States in this kind of race against China, and it's a challenging one. This is world changing technology, and it can be scary to a lot of folks. I do think we are in a private property rights state, and even understanding the distinction between federal law and state law and the ability of counties and municipalities to engage in this is really important. I'm proud to be a lawyer and one of those other Scarlet L's. But I'm proud of that kind of background in how these laws work together. President Trump put out a very important executive order on this recently, and it's a shot across the bow to the AI companies. No one is saying that this won't be regulated in any way. That's a ridiculous assertion. But this executive order talks about preserving our long-term resources, water, and protecting the ratepayers. That ratepayers for electricity should not subsidize these AI data centers coming in. I'm going to stand by those principles going forward. We've got to protect the ratepayers, and we've got to protect our long-term resources. And I have the kind of the experience and the credibility to lead into that.
All right. Final question of the evening. And, of course, we're going to stay right here on AI because it seems like it's a good topic. I guess you could say it's a hot topic, actually. Yeah. And I want to preface this by that here locally, it's like a – and I think our county judge could probably attest to this too because we kind of know the heartbeat of the community and stuff. But it's a 50-50% want it and don't want it. I mean, it is – It's one of those things, that when you're campaigning out there, they're like, is there any data centers coming? You're like, well, no one's approached us yet. Well, I don't want them. And then someone else says, are they coming? We haven't been approached yet. Well, I would love to have it, Yeah. So anyway, but going with that, so should, speaking of regulation and stuff like that, should the federal government incentivize AI data centers development in rural America, including West Texas? And if so, what safeguards should be in place regarding land use, water usage, and cybersecurity? And should the federal government incentivize So anyway, going back to that, if so, what safeguards should be in place regarding land use, water use, and cybersecurity?
It's a good question. So we are in a race. I don't think particular incentives, tax incentives or anything like that are needed. This is... There is a lot of money in this world of AI development. With respect to the laws on with respect to water use or rates, so much of that or land use, so much of that is governed by our state. And thank goodness, right? No one wants the federal government to have more say over our land rights. That we talked about that earlier with the Muleshoe Wildlife Refuge. I have had a career of trying to keep Washington, D.C. from sinking its hooks into our private property rights, locally, regionally, as a state. And so we in Texas are blessed to live in a state that lowers the red tape, honors private property rights, and I don't begrudge any landowner who may want to sell particular rights to go with their land, whether that's for solar development or anything else. I do love, and my heart is for agriculture. You know, in some ways, with respect to like solar, it pains me to see God's version of energy conversion, photosynthesis, replaced with photovoltaics. For that reason, I think it's really important that we as a nation, and some of this was contained in the One Big Beautiful Bill, moving some of the tax incentives for electricity production from wind and solar to kind of the new generation of more efficient electricity production, nuclear, geothermal, fusion, things like that. And that was a key component of the One Big Beautiful Bill, and I think it's critically important so that we can generate the electricity needed for these artificial intelligence units in a more efficient way that has less of an environmental footprint, that takes up less of our land resources, but protects the ratepayers in the process by adding electricity into the grid.
All right. Mr. Enriquez, do I need a...
I think I got it.
All right.
I think every person in West Texas should be actually excited about this conversation and moving forward with AI investments coming into our region, mainly because we have incredible state lawmakers. And I'm very weary of candidates that come up and promise all these crazy things in the federal government, because I believe the government that governs the least governs the best. The 10th Amendment is actually pretty clear. If it's on the Constitution, you don't touch it. I think whoever wins this race needs to have a trust in our local and state leaders, which is why I did not interview for the super PAC that Tom did, because I knew from day one it actually countered the water policies that State Senator Charles Perry and Kevin Sparks were advocating for in the state legislature. And so I think that's important for West Texas to know that on the federal side, we should actually mimic and support what happens on the state side. And if we leave that fight to our state lawmakers, we're in good hands. When the federal government decides to get involved and have all these big promises, we're in big trouble, which is why we've never interviewed for a special interest super PAC, because we believe and we trust in the leadership here in West Texas.
All right. Well, that will conclude all the questions for the night. We're going to take our next commercial break. When we come back, we will do the candidates' closing statements, and then we'll turn it over to these two beautiful faces right here that y'all can't see yet. So anyway, but we're going to take our second commercial break, and so we'll be right back, folks, here pretty quick.
Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step.
As we look forward to spending more time outdoors with the warmer weather,
with power and versatility, the Kubota M7 tractor is built for hay and forage work. Up to 168 horsepower, superior loader lift capacity, easy-to-use controls, all-day comfort, and your choice of a 30x15 semi-power shift or Kubota variable transmission. And rated number one in durability and owner experience. Talk to your hometown Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo. Go to KubotaUSA.com for full disclaimer.
Come by your local Kubota dealer at Terry County Tractor, 1203 Seagrays Road in Brownfield, or 8504 Highway 87 in Lubbock.
Terry County needs a commissioner for Precinct 4 who's ready to lead on day one. Elect Michael Dawson, conservative Republican. A Brownfield native, raised with a strong work ethic by small business owner parents. A Terry County business owner since 1989. 25 years serving Terry County in law enforcement. A leader in emergency response, Brownfield Volunteer Fire Department, and fire captain, managing people, equipment, and budgets. Michael Dawson's priorities: service before politics, disciplined budgets to protect taxpayer dollars, and keeping law enforcement, emergency services, and roads strong. Michael Dawson, local roots, proven command, ready now. Elect Michael Dawson for Terry County Commissioner, Precinct 4.
Political paid ad by Michael Dawson for Terry County Commissioner.
Terry County Veterinary Hospital is your first stop for your animal's well-being. Dr. Jim Ridenour and staff are committed to keeping your pets and animals healthy and happy. Terry County Vet provides quality medical care for all animals, large and small. We want to make sure your pets, livestock, or show projects are taken care of. Whether it be through maintenance or emergencies, Terry County Vet Hospital is there for you and your animal. Call 806-585-6363 to set up an appointment or stop by their location on the Lubbock Highway between Brownfield and Meadow.
I was born in Louisiana, down on the old bayou.
All right, folks, we are back having more fun than you can imagine behind the camera. At least this side of the camera, right? So anyway, so we will now lead into the candidates' closing statements. And first up will be Mr. Enriquez.
Well, Dan, Eric, thank you again so much for putting on this exciting forum. And for the people of West Texas, this has truly been the biggest honor and the biggest privilege of my life. I'll start with this. This election, it really is about just two things. One, who is going to defend and fight for West Texas values, and who is going to stand with President Trump. Now, I'm not going to tell you what I'm going to do to defend West Texas values. I'm going to tell you what I have already been doing. When the sanctity of life was on the ballot, only one of us rolled up their sleeves, knocked on the doors, made the calls, drove to the polls, and actually voted in the election to ensure that we were protecting unborn life. When the decriminalization of marijuana was on the ballot, an effort to push drugs across our community, only one of us rolled up their sleeves, knocked on the doors, made the calls, drove people to the polls to ensure that your kids, future my kids, never had to worry about drugs ever coming into our communities. I did that not because I ever knew I was going to run for Congress. Believe me, this has been the craziest experience of my lifetime. I did that because I love West Texas. This is the place that I was born in. This is a place where I want to raise a family in. This is a place I want to live. When it comes to standing with President Trump, June of 2023, I woke up at 3 in the morning and I took the first flight out to Miami the day that President Trump was indicted by a politically prosecuted judge in Miami. He stepped out of the courthouse, did a press conference, got into a Secret Service detail, drove down the street where I was waiting for him in a little small coffee shop with over 100 pastors ready to pray for him. That same day, I became a surrogate to his campaign, traveling over 17 different counties with him, his family, and the cabinet to ensure that Kamala Harris never touched the Oval Office. When it comes to standing with President Trump, I've been doing that. I've done that, and I'm ready to fight for West Texas. And my commitment to you is this. I helped get over a dozen pieces of legislation across the finish line without having to be a registered lobbyist, and I'll continue working. You can vote for someone who has been a part of the swamp, but you can vote for someone who has fought with President Trump to ensure that we are keeping federal government overreach outside of West Texas. And hear my heart when I say this. When my grandparents immigrated legally here to West Texas, they found Christ here. And my family has a shot of eternal salvation because here in West Texas, you don't separate God from policy. And above all our promises, I promise you this, I'm going to help to restore kingdom godly policies back into the public square. It's the reason why the RNC committee man and committee woman endorsed this campaign because, yes, indeed, we did bring over 1 million new voters into the Republican coalition. It's the same reason why Governor Abbott said he's endorsing this campaign. It's the reason why Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said Washington has enough insiders and lobbyists, and that's why I'm supporting Abraham Enriquez. And that's why the National Border Patrol Council says Abraham has the best border policies than any other candidate, and it's not even close. But the biggest endorsements that I have are the people of West Texas who are behind me in every step of the way. So on May 26th, I hope you'll vote Abraham Enriquez.
All right. Thank you, Abraham. Next, Tom Sell.
Well, Eric and Dan, I also just want to add my thanks for this time to discuss important issues, important for the people of the 19th District of Texas, and important for our nation and our leadership on the world stage going forward. It is a true privilege to get to run in this district that I love so much and have such deep roots in, and to try and be a voice for the people and to try and speak wisdom where we can into these complex issues of our day. I think this campaign really comes down to the question of who do you trust? And I'm so proud of the life that we've lived, Kyla, in West Texas, raising our family, representing good people and doing good legal work for these people in Washington, D.C. And I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of that work. I'll never run away from it. I'm so proud of the interests that we've gotten to represent and to be have been a prominent voice for ag and for rural America in Washington, D.C. But there are so many issues that we have to work on and so many issues that are important to families across this district. And so I think even in that history of being involved in the Lubbock community and ever present in the Lubbock community, actually having done some farming and ranching ourselves, I'm so proud to be engaged in the Escada Cattle Company with my father, who's 85, and doing some farming and ranching myself. Being able to emphasize as a homeowner, as one who pays taxes in Lubbock County and other counties across this region. These are the real-life experiences that I think give me the credibility to represent and to be a credible voice for the people of the 19th District in Washington, D.C. You know, we talk a lot about, and Abe is certainly good at talking about himself and these great things that he has supposedly done. But I think my record stands for itself. It is just, it's a true and honest representation of the people of this district. And it's been such an honor to get to be out there in the 33 counties and engaging with groups all over this great district and hearing their issues, actually listening and understanding what's important to the people of this 19th District of Texas. Because from the outset, I've said what Washington, D.C. needs more of is West Texas. It's our grit. It's our character. It's our integrity. It's our hopefulness, this kind of blue sky spirit that we as West Texans have, this pioneer spirit that is still alive and well in West Texas. So I want to ask for your vote on May 26th and 18th through the 22nd. I just want to say thank you for this opportunity. God bless West Texas, and God bless the United States of America.
And now we once again test the stability of the camera and its ability to take shock. So, gentlemen, thank you both. Yes. It has been a very enlightening evening. Lots of passion in this room, folks. It has been a good evening, but I feel like that we've asked a lot of good questions about West Texas and the important issues that are facing this area going forward. You got anything you want to throw in before I wrap up, Mayor?
Just thank you. Thank you for coming, and thank you for everybody that is here today. And West Texas is the best Texas, and District 19 is the best in the whole United States.
Folks, just want to encourage you from Town Talk Media, be informed. Most importantly, get out and vote. These forums have been an opportunity for all of West Texas. I know there's been several for people to hear the issues and to make their own call, and that's what we want to do. Be informed. Get out and vote next week. Early voting begins on the 18th. It'll end on the 22nd. And then Election Day, I had to look at my calendar on my phone to make sure I had the dates right. The 26th is actually Election Day. It is the day after Memorial Day. So please, again, get informed. Do your homework and get out and vote, folks. We've got several elections, and we got another election in Terry County that's also up that day as well.
Yes,
we need to mention too.
Precinct 4 County Commissioner between Michael Dawson and Elvis Rodriguez. Yeah, Elvis has been in the building.
Yeah, we repeatedly actually, yeah, and we have a doubleheader here in Terry County on that election day. Very quickly, a thank you to our sponsors. We mentioned them at the top of the show. We could not do what we do without them. And a special thank you to Kyle Barnett from BRMC and our county judge, Tony Cervantes. We appreciate you gentlemen coming tonight and joining us here in this forum. Folks, have a great evening. Have a great rest of the week. We'll see you tomorrow morning on the PAC show at 9:30. We'll kind of recap this. And, of course,
I'm sure y'all
lots,
be
of news,
about.
Lots of news. lots of news in the news cycle the last 24 hours, too, pertaining to what we were talking about, some of the issues tonight with Iran and Strait of Hormuz. So lots to talk about tomorrow morning at 9:30. We'll look forward to seeing you then on the PAC show.